And welcome back to We the People Radio. Let's see if we can get Bill's headphones on without having an incident here.
No incident.
Yes. So I'm Aaron Ryan.
And Bill Cundiff.
And Bob Martin.
Bob provides all our music.
Let's have an international incident.
Right here in Reading.
Right here in the studio. All right, so we just finished a really fun hour with Ambassador Francis Rooney, and the archive of that will be posted this afternoon with no commercials in it. Sorry, commercial guys. No commercials, if you want to send that to a friend, and the interview with Jake McCauley that we're about to start, that'll be on there as a separate hour with no commercials as well, which is super fun. And we air, details. We air live Sundays from noon to 2. There's a chat room open during that time. We're on KCNR 1460 AM in California. Then on Mondays, we air as a recording. What do they call it?
On a delayed basis.
Delayed basis. There you go.
That's on Radio Talk.
On WNJC 1360.
I don't want to call it a replay because it actually is a new program, but it's just delayed.
It's new for them. Yeah. And that's in Philadelphia and New Jersey. So
WNJC.
Kind of fun. So you can always catch us online, wethepeopleradio.us, and we always have the archives up and all the various shows, contact information. If you have ideas for programming, we'd love them. Ideas for sponsorship, like that too. So, there you have it. Back to business. We're here with Jake McCauley. And we've tried to set up this interview like a million times, and things keep happening. And then, I don't know, we finally got him.
Yeah. Corralled him.
So Jake's the Chief Executive Officer of the Institute on the Constitution. It's an educational outreach that presents the founders' American view of law and government. I think most of the people that would listen to this show would say, thank you, finally. They've produced thousands of graduates in all 50 states with a full understanding of the biblical principles on which America's founding documents are based. So take that, lefties. Jake, how's it going?
How's it going, Aaron? Thank you for having me.
You know, all those people out there that are like, our founding documents aren't based on any religious principles. So you're here to make their life hard, aren't you? You just live for that.
I don't know if I live for it, but I don't try to avoid it. Let's put it that way.
You sound like you're far away.
I do.
Hey, there you go. You're
getting good?
Yep, you're getting closer.
I apologize.
Move that iPhone around.
I'm Well, on the weekends it's very tricky because I travel quite a bit.
Oh, that's good.
At the time, I'm in North Carolina, and North Carolina hates Sprint, and that's what I use. And I love Sprint personally, but sometimes the reception cannot be so good.
You brought
up a good point.
Uh-huh.
About people not wanting to believe the obvious, that the foundations of our country or even the government, the institution of government, has biblical underpinnings. We want to say that it's more of a secular document or an atheistic document. But that's just not true. When the Declaration of Independence, when Jefferson put forth the words and the committee ratified it, it wasn't just him, there was a committee of five men that wrote that document, but he was the main author. He said we hold these truths to be self-evident that all men are created equal. That means the presupposition was that there is a creator, God, somebody that created us, and that we were created equal, and that we were endowed by the creator with certain inalienable rights, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Therefore, a person who would deny the existence of a God on the biblical basis for the assertions that are put forth in the Declaration of Independence or in our Constitution, if they deny God, then they deny the fact that they have any rights. And we might as well become a dictatorship based on evolution and classes. Certain classes evolve more than others, and there's a powerful class, and that we could all be slaves. But because we have the documents that we have and the government that we have, based on the Christian principle that we are created equal, we have the liberties that we have. So they love the liberty. They just hate the God that gave it to them. That just confuses me.
Doesn't that just sound about right, though?
It is. It's the epitome of confusion.
Yeah, and you know, they've also taken, you know, it's an interesting thing, you know, to pick and choose who is, you know, always who was a Christian and who wasn't, and so was an atheist, and blah, blah, blah. I bet you get that all the time.
Well, I do, but the problem is, and this is what I've found, we do a lot of work with adults, we train legislators, we have a course of instruction at theamericanview.com, and I've been doing this for well over a decade, and a lot of folks wanted to bring that forward, but, you know, our founders were deists, they were atheists, etc. But they don't have any real firm evidence for any of those. And we have concrete evidence through the writings, through their letters, and through the governing documents, through the Constitution, through the Northwest Ordinance, through the Bill of Rights. These men were Christians, and they debated and ratified what was the specific wording and why. Their justification, in other words, the underpinning for the reason that they chose the words that they did or the form of government that we have. They went back to the Bible and said, well, it says in the book of Deuteronomy, or it says in the prophet Isaiah, or Christ says, that's what they were using when they were trying to debate and ratify the Bill of Rights and all of the other documents. So we have that as proof and as evidence. And again, why somebody would want to deny their creator is beyond me, because when you do that, you deny your inalienable rights. And if you do that, then why don't we just move to all these other atheistic countries that are across the world, that are in poverty, or that are third world, or that are ran in a very non-freedom-centered society? Why don't we move there? Because this whole thing was just a failure, but it wasn't. That's why they stay here. But again, we want to get rid of the lawgiver, because that conflicts with what we want to do. We want to be God, and I find that's kind of the answer that you come down to when people are so brutally honest. They want to determine what's right and wrong, and therefore they want that power, which means that they want to be God.
Yeah.
We have two gods. There is only one God.
Well, okay, so for the... We might as well start with the debunking. So for all those people who think that the separation of church and state is part of the Constitution, why don't we just release the beast? If this comes up in your class or whatever, and someone says, "But there's a separation of church and state in the Constitution," how exactly would you put them in their tiny box?
I'm so glad you brought that up, because actually, that bugs me. Good lie, and I'm not saying that lying is good, but in order to sell a lie, generally you put a little bit of what in that lie?
Yeah, it's got to have a little truth in it.
A little truth. So there is the phrase, separation of church and state. It does exist, and our founding fathers believed in it very deeply. So the problem was, in England, where the king was, he's the head of the secular government, but he's also the head of the church. It makes it very difficult for freedom to, or freedom of conscience for that matter, or freedom of worship to happen. Because you got this guy with guns and swords that will kill you if you don't worship a certain way. Well, that's tyranny. And that jurisdiction belongs to God. It's called freedom of conscience. And so they wanted the church and the state separate. But if you could picture with me, how long before we have our next break? I've got a wonderful analogy. I think will really open people's eyes to that.
I don't know. Bob, you want to take an early break or a late break?
We got about 2 minutes.
He says 2 minutes.
We got 2 minutes. Okay, well, I'm going to start with this. We're going to start with a building. It's a building with four walls and, of course, the ceiling. And that structure exists with four walls, four structural walls. God has ordained four government jurisdictions. And I speak of God not as a clerical man with a robe that preaches the Bible to church every Sunday. I speak of God as a minister. And Romans 13 clearly identified these jurisdictions, and he gave one jurisdiction called civil government to his ministers. That word, dikones, or different people say, pronounce it different ways, but that is essentially the translation. It is the same word that we get deacon from. So a governor, most people think of him as a secular individual, but it's not. He's actually a biblical individual that God ordained, and the job of civil government is to protect our God-given rights. You also have family government. Families were ordained because children needed somebody to raise them in the nurture and admonition and fear of the Lord. Then you also have personal government, which is you and I. We choose whether we want to put a seatbelt on, for example, when we get in our car. We choose whether or not to commit crimes. We choose whether or not to commit adultery. If we're in marriage, we choose whether or not to steal, lie, etc. And we're beholden to God's laws, which are the Ten Commandments. So that's self-government. And there's family government, because children can't be self-governed. And there's church government. Generally, families get together like they did when they came to our country from Europe. And what was the first building they built? They built a community hall for divine worship services, so they could worship the God who gave them the right to life, liberty, and religious freedom, ultimately, which they were seeking. So that's church government, and that's huge. Generally, in church government, you know what? I'm going to stop right now. I want everybody to get this picture. You have four jurisdictions of government. You have self-government, family, church government, and civil government. And God is on the ceiling. that God is above all of those jurisdictions. He gives them their authority. He built them. Each of those walls or those jurisdictions touches him and goes no higher. They look to him for their source, as their source of authority. He's the ceiling. And that's important for us to understand. Now, when we get back from the next break, I'm going to explain a little bit more of the functions and duties of each of those jurisdictions, and then this will burst the lie of separation of church and state as it's been pitched to us as Americans.
Outstanding. Oh, and you just got unmuffled there right at the end. Say something else, Jake.
I'm still with you.
Hey.
Wow, did nobody get any of that?
No,
oh,
we did, but you were kind of muffled. Now all of a sudden
muffled.
You're really clear.
Yeah. Wow. So freeze. Don't move.
I'm not moving. I haven't moved, actually. I'm sorry about that.
No, it's okay. I could feel people straining to listen. So, no sweat. We'll be right back with Jake McCauley. You're listening to We the People Radio. Please join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
Give a damn's busted.
Lies, lies, nothing but lies.
That was the SCOTUS. Oh.
Hey, who are you talking to over there?
I don't know. I was trying to figure out what somebody was saying in the chat room. I thought Bob was still trying out the music. He's been playing the same thing over and over. I was lulled into some, I don't know, imaginary land there.
Yeah.
Why don't you say hi, we're back.
Another universe.
What are your lips glued shut?
I was laughing at you.
I know. I'm over here. I'm like, what? What is this person saying? Oh, my gosh. Well, chaos continues here at We the People Radio. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
In fairness to you, we lost our guest just before we were scheduled to come back. And
yeah, he called. The phone was ringing. Bob's playing the same song over and over, trying to find where he wants to play it. He started playing it again. I guess I just I was off on my own planet.
Doing that and trying to get the guest back on the air.
Exactly.
At the same time. So, yes, I can understand your confusion.
Oh, you know what happens without actual good reasons. So, Jake, you were going to... You were going to hang up on us. No. Jake is there?
I think
I'm here.
Hey, there,
oh,
you,
there
are.
You are. Loud and clear.
You had some funky noises there for a second. That weren't me, by the way. That wasn't me that time. Okay, so you're going to hammer home the separation of church and state mythical.
And again, I appreciate you for having me on here, Aaron and Bill, and working through these things. going back to the building now, see, we've got four walls. God ordained four government jurisdictions. Most people, when they think government, they think civil government or Washington, D.C. We have the self-government jurisdiction. God created us, and he created Adam in the Garden of Eden, the first man. He created him with inalienable rights, right to life, liberty, and property. And he said, govern yourselves. And how did he expect us to govern ourselves? By his law. That was the Ten Commandments. It's also the basis for English common law, or common law in general, which is what our courts, if you look at Article 7, or not Article 7, but the Seventh Amendment of the Bill of Rights, and all suits at common law. Our judges judge by common law. The basis for their authority in casting their judgments is found in the Ten Commandments. So he said to us, thou shalt not kill. Thou shalt not steal. Worship one God. Do not make any idols. Do not take my name in vain. Do not lie, etc. So that's your self-governing law. That is where a majority of government is supposed to happen and does happen. Because he knew that children, when they're born, they need to be raised in the nurture and admonition of the fear of the Lord. He gave that commandment to parents. So you have family government. Families will raise their children that way. Families are also a strong structure. It's the source of all health, education, and welfare. And I say education because parents are responsible to educate their children. It's not the state's job. The state doesn't have any children. The state has never even been pregnant. Although, I realize you all are in California and crazy things happen.
I've never
been pregnant in California.
I was going to say, you know, Jake, you really shouldn't, you shouldn't rule anything out.
Okay. All right. Well, to my knowledge, that has not happened. Therefore, God commanded us to do education and welfare. The home is, let's just put it plainly, every child is a welfare case. We provide for them. We give them their needs. We give them a house. Give them transportation, et cetera, et cetera. And the hope is that by the end of us raising them, they will no longer need welfare. And the general welfare clause, of course, is a misconstrued. General welfare means as it applies to us all generally. It was never intended to be specific welfare, where we help certain socioeconomic groups or we help certain demographics over others. It had to be general. It had to affect us all. So that was a little rabbit trail, but I'm coming back to welfare.
No, that's
welfare
okay.
Welfare starts in the home. Welfare starts in the home because when the child is done, now he's going to go to college. In the past, you, Aaron, Bill, Bob, the producer, when you went to college, you probably didn't look to the federal government to give you money to do so. Of course not. It's not jurisdiction. It's not its boundary of government. It's not its wall, if you will, because we're dealing with walls here. It was the parents. Now, health care. Where do we go when we're sick? As children, we generally go to the mother. And mother helps with that sickness. Now, as you get these three jurisdictions, health, education, and welfare, families would come together and kind of contract with each other, if you will. I guess it's not a professional contract, but contract with each other based on our religious views or our values or worshiping God, and communities would be structured around a church. If you ever watch Little House on the Prairie, you know that the kids all went to school at the church. You know that the hospital, when there was a health epidemic or crisis in the town, the hospital was the church. It got converted into a hospital where the sick would come. When the local constable came to town to try a case, they did that at the church. When the town hall meetings were called to get together, they did that at the church. The women's group met at the church. You get what I'm saying here? If you look at hospitals from the 50s and the 40s, they were all named Christian names. St. Jude's is just an example. St. Mary's or the Baptist Hospital. I mean, there's so many different hospitals named after religious institutions because the church collectively, through family government, and then delegated that jurisdiction to themselves collectively in the form of the church. They educated children. Education was run by churches for the longest time. If you look right now, if we call ourselves the Church Universal, Christians in general, churches in this country own by far the most real estate out of any other type of group, out of any other corporation. They own the most real estate. They have an opportunity to speak to the constituency on at least a biweekly basis. Most churches do church services twice. Imagine the wealth that's combined with all the congregation members. Church is a powerful institution, but unfortunately it's went to sleep and it's delegated most of its authorities to that fourth wall of government jurisdiction that God ordained. And that's civil government. And the reason he ordained civil government, if you look in Romans 13, Paul spells it out very clearly, and if you read the book of Exodus, you can see it. There was a reason for civil government, that was to execute the justice system, to bear the sword. In other words, if Aaron, you have a real estate transaction, you own a home, and the guy stiffs you for your rent, you don't go to your pastor and ask him to arrest you. You're a civil magistrate who has delegated authority. That delegated authority, of course, is given by we the people. That was the contract we set. It was the Constitution. We gave certain enumerated powers. And we did not say to them, hey, if we didn't put it in here, you're free to do it. That's how government reads the Constitution now. They tell us, well, you didn't say we couldn't do it. Therefore, we're going to. They assume that authority. That's not right. Civil government's job was just to execute the justice system and to defend the borders. Because you don't want your pastor to have to raise an army to defend the borders, do you?
Yeah, true. Well, I don't know. You might do a better job, actually.
I was just going to say that. Never mind that, okay?
Yeah, that's a bad example. Take that out.
And you don't want to, but it could be the case. You don't want Nancy Pelosi to administer your sacraments.
Okay.
You don't want her baptizing your children.
Yeah, no, if she's in the thing, the answer's no.
unless
it's should she retire, then the answer's yes.
And I'm going to tell you why. Because with those four walls, there's four corners in that house, signifying there's a separation between each wall. The separation between church and state is very clear. Nancy Pelosi doesn't cross over to the church and take control of the church like the King of England did. Our founders didn't want that, and they didn't want the church to have to raise up a posse to defend the borders and administer the justice system. Their job is to administer the sacraments and redemption and the gospel to mankind. Now, a good way to understand this, too, is when Jesus said, do you remember the verse? I love Jesus, first of all. I hope you guys do, too. I hope everybody listening does.
It's Sunday morning. Even if you didn't, you should lie about it.
Well, I'll tell you what. I don't need to, because that's my life right now. I was a counterculture kid, very bad kid. When I was 17, that was when I was converted. It's the only reason I'm on the radio with you today. But I pursue his word very violently, if you will, in some regards. I'm doing it all the time. I don't let things get in the way of that. But they kind of tricked Jesus, and they said, Jesus, should we pay taxes?
Oh, yeah.
And I know there's a lot of folks that don't like to pay taxes. A lot of people that say that our tax money is being used unjustifiably. A lot of people say that we don't even have money anymore. We have a fiat currency. And a lot of those trails and rabbit trails are correct. But I'm not here to debate that. Jesus said, give me a coin. He's the God of the earth. They think they're going to trick him. I'm so humored by that. And I run into people like this all the time. I'm just humored by it. They want to eliminate God. They say he has nothing to do with it. We don't have to obey him. It's just ludicrous. I try not to obey gravity and jump out of a plane. God created certain laws. You know, there's ramifications for it. But Jesus said, render unto Caesar what is Caesar's. So he legitimized, he validated that government jurisdiction, that wall, if you will, in our house. And then he said, render unto God what Caesar doesn't want. Is that how that verse goes?
Say it again?
Render unto God what Caesar doesn't want.
No. I was like, wait a second, I don't think it was that long.
I've never heard that.
yeah, it wasn't that
exactly.
long.
Because he didn't say that.
He said, render unto God.
Yeah. So he limited Caesar's jurisdiction. He said God has a jurisdiction separate from him. And that's why I said God goes on the ceiling. He's above everything. Every one of those jurisdictions puts him. I'm accountable to God as an individual. My family is accountable to God as a family. The church is definitely accountable to God to preach the word. And civil government is accountable to God to defend our God-given right. So the only separation that exists is between the jurisdictional boundaries of a church and the state. There is no separation between God and government. Matter of fact, government derives its legitimacy and its authority to bear the sword only because God gave it that authority. And government can only exist through the consent of the governed. So if government tries to get up on the ceiling and become God and tell churches they have to marry two men, if government gets up on the ceiling and tells families what they can and can't educate their kids with, if government gets up on the ceiling and tries to tell the individual he's got to buckle his seatbelt, or he's got to wear a bicycle helmet, or a motorcycle helmet, he's no longer in his jurisdiction. Therefore, as the Declaration of Independence says, the king is no longer fit to be a ruler of a free people. And our duty, it's not just our right, it's our duty, it says in the Declaration of Independence, to throw off such governments and to place new guards in government over us. And so that, in a nutshell, is the separation theory. And I think even an atheist would be very happy to know that the government can't force him to worship Jesus. And he's very happy to know that the church would not get involved and force him to worship Jesus either, but that his individual God-given rights are protected by government. But that does not give him the right to break self-government laws. Because what you're seeing today, government is being used as an instrument to create anarchy in a lot of ways. This government has said it is God, and that's the pagan view of who God is. Does that all make sense?
Yeah, that does make sense. And yet, this really isn't... I mean, the Constitution's as documents go, it's a small document. It's short.
Right. Take 20 minutes to read it.
Yeah, so how is it that people can keep asserting that there is this mythical, you know, separation of church and state? How is it that why can't we kill it?
Well, it's, I believe it was Mark Twain, but there was Joshua Billings, I think, made the statement. He said, it ain't what a man don't know that hurts him. I'm kind of paraphrasing this.
Uh-huh.
It's what he knows for sure. It just ain't so. So we know for sure the separation of church and state. That means we're supposed to keep God out of everything. But it just ain't so.
Yeah.
So we become zealots for something that's a legal fiction. It's non-existent. And this goes back to the foundation. John Adams said that our Constitution, it's a great document, but it's a piece of paper. But then I've looked at the Constitution. I used to live in D.C. area, and I would go down to the Archives Building. It's my favorite building. I would look at the Declaration. I would show my children. My children have the Bill of Rights memorized, many of them. And we would look at this original document. It's just a piece of paper, and that's all it was. Bill, unless we enforce that, unless we stand and enforce it, that's all it's going to be. And so when people have the wrong understanding of what it is, they become zealous for what's wrong, and ultimately, I don't know if you read the book by Frederick Bastiat, it's called The Law. The law uses the law against the law, if you will. They use force against the law. So now if our law says that gravity is illegal, this is just an example of how we can't change fixed standards of what God gave. William Blackstone said that the only way that a municipal law can be enacted, and Blackstone is who our founders depended upon when they brought up the concept of law and what law was and what government could do in jurisdiction, he said that it has to square with the laws of nature and nature's God. And that's written in the Declaration of Independence. That's where we asserted our rights. The law of nature, nature's God.
And yet, the more we take God out of, you know, they take it out of the courthouses, they take it out of the schools, they take it, the worse things are getting. We are going backwards, it seems like. The more we rule that way.
Well, it's not helping our kids or our schools.
Well, there's no baseline anymore.
Uh-huh. Yeah, there's no common decency, because that used to flow from morality.
Right.
And now that morality is a dirty word, you know, we can't talk about it. We need to take another quick break. We're going to come back with Jake McCauley and chat some more. If you have questions or comments or anything else, and it is Sunday afternoon, jump online with us, wethepeopleradio.us. I think God is one of us, but I just want to say, from my point of view, I hope he votes more than once in an election next year. I'm all up for that kind of voter fraud. Go God. He can save us. Jake, back to you. Oh, no. Did something bad happen to Jake?
No, I think.
Jake, are you?
No, I'm still here. Oh. I apologize.
He's just in awe of you.
During the War of Resistance, Thomas Jefferson and also John Adams, one of the rally cries was, "No king but King Jesus," because of his justice. So anyway, that just reminded me of that when he said if God would vote. And, you know, God has given us all the tools that we need. And going back to before we were on the last break, John Adams also said that our Constitution was made for a moral and a religious people. It is wholly inadequate. It's just that piece of paper in the Archives Building without that kind of people to enforce or to walk it out.
And, you know, that's what we're seeing. I mean, people are so, you know, it's like, why doesn't somebody do something? Well, when you sit down and you look at the actual constitutional remedies to an executive branch that disregards the rule of law, disregards the Constitution, our Constitution wasn't written with a you know, with a ripcord we could pull to say, oh, wait a minute, we got the wrong guy in the, you know, in the big chair.
Yeah.
Just wasn't made that way.
Well, you know, another thing is, too, is judicial activism. I know you all have experienced that in California.
Yes.
You know, Congress has the authority to limit all appellate jurisdiction. Congress could literally say, okay, courts, anything that has to do with prayer and states, you know, states having nativity scenes on their front lawn or Ten Commandments posted, Congress could literally make the law that the Supreme Court could not rule on those instances. It would be left to the states, but they don't.
Well, so at this particular moment, though, how is Congress going to do that? Because nobody works alone. Congress is the House plus the Senate, signed by the President.
Yep.
So without 60 votes in the Senate, I mean, majority doesn't do you any good if everything goes down in flames.
But that gets down to the people again. Are we going to be apathetic, or are we going to work hard for liberty?
Oh, exactly.
You're on the radio on Sundays because you want to work hard for liberty.
Exactly. I think folks just need to realize, though. I mean, a lot of people don't realize that. They think, well, you know, the Republicans have a majority in the Senate. Why can't they get all this stuff through? And a lot of people are unfamiliar with exactly how laws are passed. And there has to be... You can have majority. Majority's great. That allows you to bring up bills. And it allows you to set the calendar... there are a lot of good things that happen with majority and bad things the other way. But, you know, at the end of the day, the president's got to sign the law, so you got to get it through the process.
Mm-hmm.
Super frustrating.
It seems to me that comes down to a lack of education. That's why we started theamericanview.com or the Institute on the Constitution. The reason is because we saw that there was just, you know, for instance, myself, I became a Christian when I was 18 and been a counterculture kid, kicked out of school as a senior, had been in treatment numerous times. Finally went to a place called Teen Challenge where they offered me the Bible and Christianity, and that was where I was converted, and I didn't turn back to the old stuff anymore. But then I started winning people to the Lord, you know, and being kind of evangelical, going to schools, sharing with youth my testimony, going to treatment centers, etc. And I had never even voted because I thought the government was just bad. You know, it's bad politics. That's not Christianity. That's where evil people go to get power and rich and things like that. And it wasn't until I took the course that I now talk about and travel all over the country and teach that my eyes were open to the fact that, hold on a second, God is the source of my rights, and God created laws to protect my rights. And that's the government's job, the rule of law.
Sure. And if you don't participate in it...
That's right.
Then, because that happened, we saw that the last election. The evangelical bloc basically stayed home for the most part.
They weren't excited about the candidate. And I think that's another thing, too. We're looking to somebody else to do it. Maybe we're the candidate in a lot of regards. And there's so much that people can do locally.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm going to be coming to town in October, is it the 18th, I believe, and going through the... October 12th. I'm going to be in Reading at the tea party there. And then on throughout that week into the next week, I think we end at Sutter Buttes the following Monday. I think my schedule is right on your website. But these are things we're going to be talking about.
Yep, you're here from, you go from October 12th through October the 19th, actually, that whole week in California. And that is at the very bottom of the page at wethepeopleradio.us.
I think we even go into the next week, too. I'm going to be at a church in Lodi on Sunday and
send me
Monday
that.
At the Sutter Buttes. We'll do. I'll give you the rest of that information.
Because I only have
a couple people call since.
Yeah, I've got the 12th through the 19th. And do I have... Oh, and I have your email on there. So if people have any questions, theamericanview.com is posted. Your Facebook and Twitter pages and stuff are on there. So people have no excuse for not being able to find you. Do you travel all over the country?
Yes, I do. As I said, right now I'm in North Carolina. I'm going to. I just got back from Maryland. But yes, we're traveling in all 50 states. We have people that have graduated our courses of instruction in all 50 states, and it's eye opening. And once you get your eyes open to see that this isn't how it has to be, and here's my role to play in it, you can make some changes. We're seeing a lot of changes done on local levels, where local governments are saying, hey, thanks anyway, state government, but we're not going to have that in our county. Or thanks anyway, Obama, but that's not coming into this county. And that's important. There's a great deal of power on the local jurisdictions, a great deal of power with sheriffs. and county councils. We don't identify these things. We just think, well, this train's going over the cliff, nothing I can do to stop it, so I'm just going to get mine. And I think it's a very un-American attitude. If our founders would have thought that, George Washington only had 3% of the population in his colonial army. 3%.
Isn't that crazy?
It is crazy, but it shows divine providence will stand with those that are willing to stand with God.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I look. That's where I get my confidence. Whether I win or lose, at least I can see people's lives turned around, lives changed, and application of these principles. Because there's really only two ways that a nation is governed. You're governed from a pagan view of government. And when I say pagan, I mean non-religious, no authority given to God or no recognition of a God. Well, if that's the case, then guess who becomes God? The government.
Mm-hmm.
Because the government has to, because they have the most guns, they have the most money, and they have the most muscle. And if the government is God, you can't limit their jurisdiction and authority. Who's going to tell the king? You're going to lose your head. Well, that is going to result in tyranny. And why is that going to result in tyranny? Because power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. That's why we have checks and balances. Nobody has absolute power. Nobody's supposed to. Sometimes it's usurped by the courts, sometimes by the guy who said he has a pen and a cell phone. That's not how it's supposed to work. That's based off an evolution system, too, by the way. It doesn't say in the Declaration of Independence, we hold these truths, that all men have evolved equal. The quote-unquote theory, some people call it science, of evolution is very dangerous. The Declaration says we believe that all men are created equal by our Creator. And He's divine. And He divinely ordained government to do what? To protect our rights. We already talked about how Jesus limited government when He said give to Caesar what's Caesar's, Romans 13. But He said give to God what is God's, in other words, everything doesn't belong to Caesar. So He limits that. That results in a republic where the law is king. And even the rulers are subservient to the law.
That's becoming a novel idea of late.
Yes. And gosh, you know, all these things are there in the archives. You gotta dust them up and read up on them, sharpen our chops. That's why you need to come to the events when we're out there in California. That's why you need to listen to shows that talk about these things like yours. And that's how we get an educated, you know, citizenry. But I think so many people are so concerned about the football game and who's thinking the hole and the little ball and the golf and things like that. Nothing wrong with sports or athletics, but we've become so consumed with that entertainment culture that we're letting all this stuff kind of go to the wayside.
Well, when you look at how many people are angry about the way our government is run and who's running it, but then you look at the percentage of people that show up
to vote. Yeah.
I mean, you're looking at 25 or 27% of people show up to vote, and that's where you end up with these local governments that literally have all the power being occupied by a bunch of nut jobs because people don't get out and do their part.
You
and
also have
people that know what's happening.
Well, and that is fueled by and actually back feeds into just misinformation. You know, a lot of people think, well, my vote for local, I mean, how many times do you hear this? I vote for the local people, but the presidential election doesn't matter. They're all crooked, so they're all the same, therefore it doesn't affect me. And yet, most people, their negative interaction with the government happens through the bureaucracy, whether it's IRS or even on a state
EPA,
level. Yeah, Fish and Game, yeah. EPA, Fish and Wildlife. All those agencies are executive branch agencies. The person that heads up the executive branch, whether it's the governor in your state or the president in the country, appoints the heads of all those bureaucracies. That's where the accountability is. People turn to Congress to make those people accountable, but all they do is fund. They don't get to hire and fire them. I think sometimes people have a skewed view of the division of labor.
Well, in the division of power, what you're expressing, that is, there is truth to that. However, I want to say that Congress has a very big stick.
Yeah, they do.
So they can limit these jurisdictions, but again, you need the cooperation of each. And we originally had separation of powers. It wasn't a bad thing that the Senate and the House didn't get along because they didn't need to get a lot of stuff done. In fact, Thomas Jefferson was known to send them home early He said, because if you sit around here for too long, you'll figure out something to do. And every time government does something, there goes some of our liberties.
It is kind of funny because people will say, well, this Congress is unproductive because it hasn't made very many laws. And I always think,
that's beautiful.
I'm like, thank God, you know? I mean, are you kidding me? Be happy. And the complexion is totally different. The House can, right now, the House can pass conservative legislation all day long. But without six people willing to cross the line in the Senate, it either wanders around and dies or it just doesn't get brought up.
Don't you feel they still should, though, because it puts it in the public debate? I mean, that's the excuse about impeachment. Oh, we can't impeach him. Senate will never vote to remove him.
If
you impeach him, I think it sends a good signal to the people that this is part of the political process. This can happen. This does exist. I don't think that's a bad thing.
I guess my thought on that is split, because on the one hand, I think, yes, it does send a good signal, but in reality, you have such a huge percentage of people that don't know that you need the Senate to complete the impeachment process, that you would have a gigantic block of people who would be thrilled that this was taking place, and then when you basically told them you were doing something that couldn't be completed, they'd be really mad.
I mean, well, who would they be mad?
Well, they'd just be mad that they wasted the time and got them all excited for nothing.
Well, I kind of get what you're saying. I mean,
I always wonder about that.
But at the same token, when Bill Clinton was impeached, he literally was impeached. The House brings up the articles of impeachment, and they impeached him. It went to Senate to be tried, and Senate will then remove whomever it is. No president has ever been removed.
Right.
Only some federal judges have. But his behavior was completely different after he was impeached and he went through all that scrutiny in the papers. I mean, did anybody else notice it? We weren't looking at, Obama is not Bill Clinton incarnate. Bill Clinton seems rather conservative, almost more conservative than George W. Bush in his second term in a lot of ways.
Yeah, it's kind of scary,
why?
Isn't it?
He was checked, and that's why. And so that check, I think, whether or not it comes through, it's still a discipline measure. And you know what? If we're not going to do it, then we might as well say government belongs to them, and we're just the pawns, and continue making money and live as long as we can.
And live with the consequences.
Well, do you actually think Obama would care? I mean, do you think it would really actually make a difference in his, all of it, in the overreach? Because I don't really think it would. I don't think he cares.
I don't know. Let's
I mean, we're guessing, but, you know, just opinion.
Each president is a man. There's a sense of individuality. They are a created person. God has created them with a conscience. They understand right and wrong. And I don't know him personally, so I couldn't speak. I've seen a lot of his policy, but most of what we see is what's on the papers. It would appear that people could understand with what you're saying, but I don't know that any president wants to go down in their record as being a president that was impeached. I think that's a big blemish, and I think that would mean something to him.
Yeah, he is kind of about his legacy to a point, but gosh, you know, look at the things how incredibly unpopular they are, and it's like they just march on, and if you say it enough times, it'll make it true, you know. We're in sort of a crazy uncharted water, I guess, as it were. Do we need to?
Well, in some regards, but history, this is kind of the historical pattern. You know, and this was the advantage to having the men that wrote the documents that we have. They had, you know, thousands of years of history to look to government systems that worked and failed, and why they worked, why they didn't fail, when they constructed our brand new government. And I think they did a very good job, and it's taken well over 200 years for it to get to this point.
True.
Which shows something was done right. And I think if we restore it, if we get back to the rules that currently exist, I think we've got a good shot at seeing another 250 years of liberty, prosperity, and peace. But if we don't, you know, like any other empire, and like John Adams said,
nope, it flames out.
Just a piece of paper. That's right.
Yeah,
exactly right.
What do you find?
I don't want that to be my legacy, so that's why I do what I do.
Good for you. And we don't want to live that long either. I guess if it's going to happen, you know, do it later. Hey, tell me this. What I would imagine you're very well received, besides the fact you're a nice guy. But, I mean, the idea of going out and teaching this, I would imagine people are very hungry for this. Or Is that what you find around the country?
Absolutely. I was in a meeting yesterday, and I said to the people there, as I say to everybody, there is so much of a demand, and this isn't sensationalism, this literally is. You could ask my wife about this. There's so much of a demand that I can't facilitate the demand of people that are hungry for this. No, that does not mean that there's not a lot of effort in this. It's not like I show up to town and thousands of people flock me. But there's thousands of people in thousands of towns. You know, there's ones, there's twos. I mean, the Committee of Correspondence was ones and twos and threes of people. Pretty soon there was the Tea Party. And after that, the Sons of Liberty kind of bolstered their political opinions. And then they were able to choose delegates to go to a Continental Congress. And, of course, the rest is history. So I can't facilitate that. We work with youth in public schools. We work with youth in private schools. And right now we're working in the homeschool market, where they're taking our courses and teaching them as a civics course. And it's eye-opening. And it's fantastic because it shows kids, listen, there is a purpose in our history, and we might have to be the George Washingtons of this day to stand up for these values against tyranny that exists in our very midst right now. And so that's what I'm finding. And yes, you're right, there is a lot of people. And the more effective that we get, the more persecution comes, because there's certain men that don't want these principles, these fundamental principles, by the way, and these elementary principles taught or let out of the bag, because they're trying to socially engineer a new system. And that's kind of frightening if we think about it.
Do you think we got here because they basically don't teach the Constitution in our schools anymore?
I think that's a big part of it, but I think the first thing, Bill, and thank you for this question, the first thing that we did is when we abandoned our fidelity to our Creator. In other words, when religion just became I'll go to church, you know, there's no real sanctity to marriage, you know, living with each other before you're married, et cetera, et cetera. And I know I'm going to step on some toes here. But when we looked at our covenant, before our Creator and said it's not a big deal, then we started to worship government. Now government was the one that had to fix, you know, single-parent homes. Government had to fix joblessness. Government had to fix all these things that before the church did, because we were religious and immoral people. They loved each other. And you wouldn't have to coerce me to donate to my church. But now we've got an IRS that literally steals legal plunder, legal theft of companies, businesses, properties, wealth, etc., to finance a system. And it all started because we abandoned our God.
Yep.
Imagine if people were self-governed and they obeyed the Ten Commandments and they looked at that as important. We wouldn't need a huge, robust federal government, because there would be very little lawlessness.
True. True. I mean, it, you know, and we've talked about this before, because we do a lot of environmental issues, just because we have so many where we are. And we've discussed before that biblically, you know, in a biblical worldview, God cast Satan out of heaven. He was the fallen angel, and Satan and the minions were supposed to capture souls here on earth and keep them from going to heaven. And, you know, really a great way to do that is to get them all to worship the earth. Or worship government, or both. I mean, worship things on the ground rather than God. And I think we have a wonderful recipe going on for that right now, and we're seeing the results.
You're right on the money. In Romans 1, if anybody reads that chapter, you'll see exactly what you just explained.
I never remember where it is.
Yeah, Romans 1. Worship the creation rather than the creator.
Mm-hmm.
And then he gives us up. He says, okay, if that's how you want it, go do it. How's that working out for us?
Well, that's the scary part, because I think that's exactly the road we've been on for quite some time, and it's starting to come home to roost now. So, you know, we've just got to get it turned around in the right direction. It's not going to happen overnight, but we've got to get it aimed in the right
direction. I think that most people want to do the right thing, and as long as they don't stay home and feel, I mean, you make them feel like they can make a difference. And so for that, we are incredibly grateful that you're willing to make the travels and make the contacts and make that happen.
And thank you for coming on today.
You got it. I'm grateful for your work, Bill and Aaron. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Jake. We've been speaking with Jake McCauley from the Institute on the Constitution. You can find all of his information and his travel schedule, at least in the short term, here on WeThePeopleRadio.us.